investigation established these conclusions more firmly, as discussed below. Documentary material that has been released since this book was written makes it even more clear that the tentative withdrawal initiative was primarily McNamara's, very likely influenced not only by the belief at the time that victory was in sight, but also by budgetary considerations. In a careful scholarly review, Mark Silverstone concludes plausibly that McNamara's effort to devise a carefully calibrated, phased reduction of U.S. troops from Vietnam seems to have been a function of federal and departmental planning as much as a response to the war itself. Silverstone also gently refutes claims about Kennedy's hidden intentions, so deeply hidden that there isn't a particle of evidence for them, though there is plenty of evidence refuting them. But Camelot wish fulfillment is likely to be as resistant to fact and logic as the rather similar Reagan worship at the other extreme of the political spectrum. The basic conclusions remain. By the late Eisenhower years, the vicious repression of the regime the U.S. imposed on South Vietnam in violation of the Geneva Agreements of 1954, which the U.S. rejected, had finally elicited indigenous resistance, which the regime was unable to contain. Kennedy, therefore, sharply escalated the U.S. intervention to direct aggression with extreme brutality, directing U.S. Air Force attacks under South Vietnamese markings, authorizing napalm and chemical warfare to destroy crops and livestock, initiating population removal to virtual concentration camps where the population was protected from the guerrillas that U.S. intelligence and province advisors knew they were mostly supporting. Reports from the U.S. military were relatively optimistic, indicating that aggression might succeed and would therefore be justified. At that point, Kennedy's advisors, primarily Defense Secretary Robert McNamara, called for phased withdrawal. Kennedy reluctantly acquiesced, while insisting to the very end that there could be no withdrawal without U.S. victory in the war he launched. Easy opportunities for withdrawal were flatly rejected in favor of escalation to the end. After the assassination, reports from the field finally began to reveal the truth. The U.S.-run war was failing to overcome the assault from the inside. The same Kennedy advisors, including those later heralded as doves, therefore called for escalation of Kennedy's war. The war spread to North Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia, with horrendous consequences, surely the worst state crime of the post-World War II period. The crime is enhanced by the reaction. There is no need to tarry on Reagan's lauding of a noble cause. Much more interesting are the reactions of presidents who can be taken seriously. President Carter's judgment that we owe the Vietnamese no debt because the destruction was mutual. Or the admonition to the Vietnamese by President Bush I, the statesman like Bush, that we seek no vengeance for the crimes the Vietnamese have committed against us, and will agree to let them enter the global system that we dominate if they will recognize their duty to put all else aside and devote themselves to the one moral issue remaining from the war, finding the remains of American pilots whom they murdered while they strayed innocently over North Vietnam. As Bush put it, with much media approbation, it was a bitter conflict, but Hanoi knows today that we seek only answers without the threat of retribution for the past. Their crimes against us can never be forgotten, but we can begin writing the last chapter of the Vietnam War if they dedicate themselves with sufficient zeal to the American pilots still missing. Across the political spectrum, the Vietnam War is regarded as a U.S. defeat. That, too, is an interesting reaction. True, the U.S. did not achieve its maximal aims. Vietnam was not turned into the Philippines. But as the record makes clear, the real concerns were quite different. They were one special case of a leading theme of Cold War history. When World War II ended, the U.S. was in a position of unprecedented wealth and power, and the political leadership developed sophisticated plans for a global system that would conform to the needs of dominant domestic forces within the business classes. Naturally, they were concerned that the system might erode, as happened at once, with what is called